parties in the 09 bring you.
Phoenix City!
City, another episode brought to you by just us.
No one wanted to join us today.
Happy Valentine's Day, Cam.
Hey, thanks, man. It's really nice to spend Valentine's Day with you and not my wife
and in my basement too. So
at least it's not a dungeon.
Yeah,
this could go downhill quite fast. This is a nice little setup you got here, though. I have to admit, I think we should record here every week.
Yeah, just a little bit far out of the way. I think
Eastbourne is a long way to go.
Yeah.
It was better than trying to fight out the traffic for the Breakers game. So.
Yeah, true enough. Let's just get into it, shall we? Because we do have a bit to cover here, even though there's only two of us. So, first off, the Knicks played up against Perth.
It's been that long since we recorded, hasn't it?
A week and a half ago? Would it have been Wednesday last week?
No, I think, wasn't that the weekend game? It was the Sunday.
Yeah, true. It was the Sunday.
And then we played Newcastle on the Thursday. So
yep.
It was a Sunday. It was a midnight kickoff.
Oh,
I do not mind admitting I did not watch that game.
Me neither.
So, and I saw the result in the morning and said, I'm probably not going to watch the replay or the highlights.
I did watch the highlights. There weren't a tremendous number of them for us. So let's just cover off the basics of it because we were missing a couple of players. Mundy was out because of the potential birth of his child. Stephen Taylor was out due to a quote-unquote tummy bug and not anything else. and Mr. Durante was out courtesy of a very, very
well-worked suspension.
He's a gained yellow card.
It was a pity, actually, that him gaining that suspension for that game was the right thing to do, and it was very well done. Just a pity it didn't work with Stephen Taylor being sick for the game.
Yep.
That, you know, that wasn't how that was supposed to work out. And obviously with Mundy not being anywhere in there as well, the core three of your defensive line effectively for the season and all sitting out of the same game was always going to cause a few issues.
Yeah, definitely did. I think it's safe to say we were second best here. Economides coming back for Perth did not help things tremendously. He looked very good. I didn't get the impression that he got all over Libby, but he certainly made enough inroads to make our life very difficult. And it's like any time you can draw the defence away from the centre of the field, so guys like Castro and Keogh are going to cause problems.
I think half that problem again comes down to who's playing in the back line. This season, when you've had Durante and Stephen Taylor there, it's given a lot more freedom to someone like Doyle or Kopchinski to pull further to the side because there's a lot of experience on the inside. If that experience is gone, it's going to leave a lot more space there for Kakachi to cover because the guys aren't quite prepared to come out and do as much work on the wings. I think it's just a combination of those factors, really.
Yeah, the fact that it's Fox and Lowry having a partner in the centre and on the right there does make it a little bit more brittle, I think is a fair thing to say. And I'll be honest, I don't think Tom Doyle's been setting the world alight.
Not his best season, I'll give you that. And it looks like he's going to be out for a few weeks now as well. But Lowry and Fox will obviously pair up in training a lot on the opposition to Durante and Taylor. So they'll be used to playing with each other, but not in a game environment. It's always in a training environment, and the game was obviously a very, very different kettle of fish. So.
Yeah, I don't think we got – I mean, I think that this was obviously a game that the management and team didn't really particularly target, obviously with trying to get Dura rested. And everything else kind of cropping up just made it a little bit more of a
hope for the best kind of
scenario. Yeah, exactly.
I consider it a free hit, basically, because of the distance or the gap between us and Newcastle below us. And if we get anything
it's just bonus points. Yeah, I totally agree. I think that was one that we didn't want to target as opposed to the Newcastle game following it, which we really needed to nail because, you know, that was your proverbial six-pointer.
Yeah. Patrick will hate that. He's probably going to edit that out now. or put Kazoo over the top of the 6-pointer to him.
Yeah, well, you know. So, I mean, basically for me, that entire back three were the second options for us. My back three are Kupczynski, Durante, and Taylor. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, considering that it was basically a second string back three, it did okay. And second string back three and second string defensive mid with Kupczynski filling in for Mandy. Nothing really kind of came great out of this. They got a nice easy header for Shane Lowry, finished off early on. Then they scored the second Konomidis, so they're up 2-0 by halftime. Konomidis had a shot off the bar after that, and then Keogh gave him the third in the 64th.
And then Keogh's goal, that was on with the Roofer era, wasn't it? Gave the ball away and Keogh.
Yeah, Keogh lashed it from a long way out. Yeah, he's targeted that. That was a very nicely taken goal to put on.
Could have had a chance, yeah. It was a very, very good goal.
So the less said about that, probably the better. I think I've said more than I really wanted to be quite honest. But, you know, it happened and we covered it. So on to Newcastle, which is the Thursday game. And this is kind of, as I said, the 6-pointer. Basically, you had an 8-point break on
by that stage. Yes.
Newcastle.
Newcastle won the game in the previous weekend when we'd lost to Perth, so they reduced it from 11 to 8.
Yep.
Basically on this game, a 5-point gap is well and truly surmountable very quickly, especially with the two games we have coming up next. But an 8-point gap and an 11-point gap, and I think that's pretty much playoffs done and dusted for Newcastle. So.
Yeah, I totally agree. They needed three out of that, otherwise they weren't catching us. And I certainly don't think that it's looking like we're going to struggle to get up above sixth at the moment. But it seems even less likely that we're going to drop out of the six, courtesy of this. The result that we haven't mentioned, 1-1.
Yes.
So that was courtesy of a Ronald Vargas goal in the 33rd minute.
Which was outstanding.
Yeah, he did very, very well.
Yeah, there's a lot of brilliant footwork there. Got a little lucky, I think, with the rebound. There's a rebound that fell to the right place, but he's slotted.
He's in traffic against four players, so, you know.
And he's managed to find a perfect spot at the near post, right up in the corner. Sale made himself big, and he's done everything right there, but he just couldn't get the hand to it. So.
Good mention of Sale there, who came in for Curto, who'd picked up, obviously, Stephen Taylor's tummy bug.
Yeah.
Word to the wise people, wash your hands, make sure you don't transmit these things.
Yeah, I thought... That first half, we were excellent. We actually were very, very, very good.
Yeah, there was someone had a shot off the bar. Was it Monday?
I don't remember, actually, to be honest. I remember we dominated possession, we dominated territory, we dominated opportunities. They scored very much against, not in the second half, very much against the run of play. And we did not deserve to go down. We didn't deserve to be behind at halftime. I genuinely thought, because of the way that match was going, it was going to be one of those games where you play brilliant football, but somehow they contrive to lose the game. And it certainly felt like that at halftime because we were playing such good football.
Mm, yeah, I agree. I think we were all over them. We do know how well Ernie can do a halftime talk, though, and it seems that he did a fairly good one.
Yeah.
It seems to be Rudan and Ernie are the exact opposites. Rudan seems to be able to get a great first half out of the team. Ernie seems to be able to talk to them well at halftime and not before. So it kind of switched up a little bit, as you say. I think we still more than edged all the kind of notable stats for the whole game as a whole.
Yeah.
So I think we're a little unlucky to only come out with a draw.
I think start of the second half, Newcastle came out very well. There was a lot of opportunity there for them. Ollie Sale, and I tweeted this at the end of the game because for me it was true, he earned us that point. That point is all his. The amount of saves he made, saves he didn't deserve to make. This was a really good game to watch as well.
Oh, like
he's done all the basic stuff he's supposed to do. He did exceptionally well. The making himself big, the cutting down the angles, the pushing the ball into safe areas so the opposition strikers don't get an easy rebound, that kind of stuff. All of that stuff he's done very well. And I think that shows, I think for Gothy, the goalkeeping coach, when he's got Curto playing like he is, he's obviously an experienced pro, but he's still got him playing very well, and he's probably the best keeper in the league at this point in time.
Yep.
To have your reserve goalkeeper come in with an hour's notice and put in that kind of performance doing those kinds of things, it says a lot about the coaching that the kid is getting at this point of the season. So I'm putting a bit of that on Gothie. I'm putting a bit of that on quite a bit of that on Ollie, because it's got to be tough an hour before kickoff saying
and sitting down for weeks at a time.
Exactly, mate, you're in, and it's going to be harsh on him. He's not going to start this weekend, and that kind of performance, you thoroughly deserve to back that.
Yeah, getting a man of the match award and then getting told to sit down.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's really tough on the guy. But he did extremely well. And what I like about him is he has a different skill set to Curto. He's much more willing to get out and come out of the box and clear his areas. And obviously the coaching is not kind of is not diminishing that his style of play, but he's still, as you say, he's doing those basics really well, the same basics that Curto does very well as well.
Yeah.
So I think as a unit that they're performing outstandingly well, all three of those guys.
Yeah.
I would love to see Gothie getting a whole lot more coaching right around that kind of goalkeeping. I don't know how much he does with the academy.
But no, I've no idea. And they do have their own goalkeeping coach that works with.
Presumably no one then.
Yeah, so he Pipes works with the Rezies. So he's there on match day working and does the goalkeeping work, has done for a couple of years.
Yep.
So, that's Jake Piper. But he's Capital Football FDO as well, I think. So,
okay, right.
Yeah, so and he's a good kid and he's decent. So, and you know, he's going to be learning from Gothie as well. He's going to be learning from teams. So there's a lot of potential in that as well.
Yeah,
you're right. It would be good to see Gothie getting his hands on a few of the younger guys too.
Yeah, because I mean we've seen Ollie play in previous seasons and he's looked okay, but he has certainly not inspired. And I think I don't want to say that it's all Gothie, because let's face it, that last year when Ollie was playing, it was a pretty dysfunctional area. Maybe it's just confidence. And
to be fair, as a coach, Fernando Vazquez had a very good reputation, and he's probably done some good work there. He's also worked Jez Buckingham prior to that as well. Wasn't necessarily a goalkeeping coach, but as a background, but obviously he's done some decent work too. So he's developing well. He's had a lot of different guys working on him. What he's done is taken the best bits of each. And it seems to be working well in this game. I think we should probably look at the two highlights of that second half.
Yeah, I think we've got to switch from the back end to the pointy end. The obvious one, unfortunately, is the pen.
Yeah.
Clear pen?
Yes. Definitely pen.
Yeah.
Fenton's done really well to get to the ball first. Really, really well.
Yeah.
And there's no way in the world the defender meant to get him at all.
Yep, totally.
Going for the ball. So it wasn't even a yellow card foul. You know, I mean, it was just a legit foul. So it was fair enough. So Fenton's done some brilliant work there.
Yeah, this is testament as to why, as a defender, you don't dive in the box. You don't take 50-50s in the box. It's just, and unfortunately, he's completely botched that one. But unfortunately, Mr. Krishna came up to take it, and as we've harped on about pretty much the whole season.
Yeah.
He is not a great pen taker.
He's not. He is now, after missing having that one saved by Mossy, which was his 10th penalty save in the A-League, which is a record.
Mosses. Yeah.
Yep. He's now got a 50-50 penalty taking record, 7 from 14.
Yeah.
Moss has saved 2 from him this season. That's, I think, the fourth one now that Ruiz had saved this season.
I wouldn't mind if it was just Moss, because I think if you get exposed to penalty takers a lot, as you would in practice, Moss playing with them for so long, you'd be able to read a player a lot better. And I think that certainly would be a mitigating factor, but it's not just Moss. It's everybody is getting saves off him. So, he's basically tried it straight down the middle. Moss has dived right, but read it well enough to realise Roy's changed his mind, changed it to the middle and just got a big boot on it, and that sent it away.
It's quite an interesting philosophy, actually, because we all know that Roy goes to Roy's left. He always goes to his left. The alternate option is down the middle. He's had quite a few saved at this point, and obviously that's going through his head. Now, I think Mossy's thought about this and goes, Roy's going to go the other way, purely because he's had no luck, such bad luck this season going to his left. He's going to try and go to the right. But Roy still stuck to what he knew. Moss has done very well getting a foot to it to save. Because any time a keeper saves a penalty, it's a good save, even when the person's taken it ain't a very good penalty taker.
And let's be honest, he has not done anything. For me, pens, they either have to be grass cutters or you have to put them above kind of shoulder height.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to make the keeper reach out and up
mm-hmm.
or out and down. And you just can't hit it at knee height, and you can't hit it.
This was kind of a grass cutter.
No, it wasn't that high. It was enough that he just basically had to fall over. You've got to make them get down to them, and he didn't do it.
See, for me, penalties down the middle, either if you're going to hit them low, you've got to hit them slow enough for the keeper to get out of the way, or if you're going to hit them hard, you go high.
Yeah, so the keeper totally
can't react fast enough, simple as that. So it's poor, and Roy has come out and said now that he's not going to be on penalties for the rest of the season.
Yep.
He came out this week. The problem I have is that's 3 points we've left on the table this season from Roy missing penalties. A couple of them haven't cost us. The one against the Jets, he put in the rebound, so not a big deal there.
Yep.
The other saves, there was this one, which cost us 2 because that would have won us the game. And there was the Sydney one where he's head late, and it was saved, and that would have given us a point for a draw. So that's 3 points we've left out there. That 3 points plus goal difference puts us into the fourth place.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, with as tight as it is between 4, 5, 6, that really hurts us quite badly.
Yes, it
is. The
last one would be Williams' goal.
Yes, true.
Yeah, which was really nicely worked down the right wing. Again, against the run of play, we dominated the first half, they scored. They dominated the second half, we scored. It was a really nicely taken goal. First time touch under the key, and not even really that much of a chance. It was a man on too, so it was nice. It was a really, really weak goal.
Yeah, I thought he was. He did very well to get there before his defender, because I didn't think the defender was that bad. You know, he was on him.
Yeah, he was.
Just half a step too slow.
Yes,
but joy of Williams' pace, I guess, is that he's getting to those ones, and he's showing he's getting enough on it to put those away.
Yeah. Confidence must be skyrocketing for him. He's taken a few. Quite a few games to get settled, but since he's got his first goal, he has just been on fire.
Well, he's been our most consistent goal scorer. I mean, Krishna went on that
first. Yeah, yeah.
Krishna went on that purple patch, but then he's fallen off a little bit.
Yeah. I think the confidence has gone because of the penalties issues. I think Roy's confidence will come back when he scores again.
Yeah, distinctly. We know that he is a streaky player, as Williams is. Confidence player, I think, is probably a better term.
Yeah.
So hopefully Roy can get one this weekend. Yeah. We'll probably best to go around the rest of the A-League.
Yeah, go for it.
We have some results. So in the same round as our 1-1 draw against Newcastle, Perth played Melbourne in top of the table clash and pegged them 2-1. From what I saw of it, and I saw it probably about 40 minutes of it in total, looked like Perth had it pretty comfortably, to be quite honest. Honda on the bench. Toivonen. Who scored?
I didn't see this, so you'll have to.
I'm just trying to remember. There's been so much football of late. I can't remember who scored the goal for victory. Basically, it was a 2-1.
Barbarossas.
Ah, yes, it was. So 2-1 to victory. Conor Meadis, I think, and Castro got the goals. The next one was the absolute burglary of Brisbane beating Sydney 2-1.
I did not know that. That's really impressive.
Oh, did you not?
No.
Two late goals, 77th and 90th, I think.
Yeah.
Wendell Hall, I think, the young fella who came back for Perth.
Yeah.
Scored the winner late on after giving Ryan Grant's mullet a bit of a loving touch.
Actually, what that result actually tells me now is that Victory and Perth definitely are the two top teams this season in the league. Conker, I think, will have that team purring next season, but this just needs the time to get them embedded. So
I don't know. There's a lot of old legs in that team in Sydney, and I think that they're struggling. I mean, having lost Majewski. Because that was a lot of running he provided for them. They've still got Ninkovic, obviously.
But he's a 10. So he's going to keep running at 10. He's still creating at 10. But it's quite interesting.
And, well, Alf at the top, at the pointy end, is doing exactly what you can ask for him. But it feels like the rest of the team isn't quite there. They do have a couple that, they've got Grant and who's the other central midfielder? Whose name
Brillante.
Yeah, Brillante. But they're also Brosk is now – not a full-time player for them. You know, it's starting to tire a little bit, and I wonder whether that's finally going to catch up with them. But the thing with Sydney is we know that they can recruit well.
Yeah.
So who knows next year?
They have the dollars and they have the pull of living in Sydney. So
yeah. The next game was, well, not the next game, but the City played Adelaide and got a nice 1-1 draw. Apparently it wasn't that interesting a game, but
that's a big result. This is a big result for us.
Well, yeah, it certainly doesn't hurt us. This is City now with Jamie McLaren there, and I think that's a real problem for us because City have been misfiring up until now, and with McLaren at the pointy end as opposed to the right back that they've been playing up there.
Yeah, don't know. they're not playing Fornaroli, which is absolutely horrific.
Not playing Fornaroli, not playing
some other guy.
No, Vidicic.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I don't understand why he's not. Unless there's an injury there.
No, he's been on the bench for
them. Yeah, I don't understand why he's not playing.
Yeah, so they haven't been playing Fornaroli. They haven't been playing Vidicic. They've been playing Richie Delatt up top, who's a right back.
Yeah.
Now they have McLaren. That gives them a bit more cutting edge, and I think that's going to be really problematic because I can see them basically picking up, you know, 2 to 3 points, 2 to 2.5 points on average for the rest of the season.
Mm.
And I don't think that we're getting near fourth if they do that. But obviously,
no, I don't think we will.
But yeah, Adelaide just looking a bit toothless, to be quite honest.
They have signed a striker,
but he doesn't seem to be getting.
Probably just needs a couple of games to get up to speed.
Yeah,
it might happen.
Maybe, but I think they're running out of time. I don't think that they're necessarily. I mean, I don't think that they're going to drop out of the six by any stretch. But if they don't start getting a few goals, that they're going to be in, you know, we're going to stay in well in touch with them possibly. And if that happens, they can drop down to sixth, and that's a trip to Perth.
Mm.
So yeah, good luck to anyone.
It's a trip to Perth if they win their first game.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
As opposed to playing third v fourth.
So it's 1 and 2 sit out the first week.
Yep, and then
3 plays 6, 4 plays 5th.
So that's right, Sydney. So it would be Sydney versus 6th.
And then 4th, 5th would be Adelaide, City or us. The lowest ranked winner goes to Perth, who will be top. And the highest ranked winner, Sydney, will go to Melbourne, someone like who will finish second. So that's the basic scenario.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that gets interesting, doesn't it?
Fancy a trip to Perth?
Not even slightly. And the final game in this round was Wanderers finally getting 3 points under their belt with a mighty 2-0 win against the Mariners.
Probably fair and coming, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't pick up 3 against the Mariners at the moment, then you're probably doing something wrong. So that leads us in nicely to – oh, I forgot to mention. Did you hear that Taggart's left Brisbane?
No, I didn't. Where's he off to?
He's off to the Blue Wings in Korea.
All right. So,
So it's pending a medical, but he played on the weekend, so, you know.
Yep.
And it looks like it's immediate. The CEO's come out and said, ciao, thanks for that. He's come out and said, thanks for that. So,
bit of cash and for Brisbane, which will go a long way.
Well, no, it won't. It'll go straight into the money that they owe.
Yeah. And great for him. Can't argue with that.
Yeah, he's certainly good enough. So it's just a shame that we keep losing players halfway through the seasons for this sort of thing.
If we're going to be a development league, which looks like the A-League is always going to be a development league, while you've got a salary cap, it's going to be.
Yeah.
That's going to happen. You're going to have guys who hit a string of form and people are going to come in with an offer of dollars and you'll take it. So
my concern with this is that we are going to get the haves and haves nots happening.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, January comes around and the teams that have cash are going to bring players in. Mm-hmm. And the players, the teams that don't, are going to be quite well. They're going to be open and vulnerable for having their best players and their players in form get siphoned off right before the playoffs. And I think that'd be a shame if that happens. I hope the new financial model of the A-League going forward would
mitigate that.
Yeah, mitigate that. Maybe slightly better pay. That is, you know, and you know, you can potentially put contracts in place such that. you're going to keep a player to the end of the season. Who knows?
There's a lot we could discuss about the future operating model of the A-League, but we probably don't.
We just don't know anything about it yet.
We probably need Dave and Pat here to actually have that conversation, to be fair.
Yeah, no, probably not Pat. but it does bring us up to the game that will be happening tomorrow as we record, Friday, the Eden Park Monster. Sounds like a lot of tickets have been sold.
Yeah, so last I heard, which wasn't today, it was 15,000 pre-sales already, which is phenomenal.
And then they've opened up another four bays or something. Yeah, and
the entire another stand has been opened up, which is great. They've got the Fever Zone is completely sold out. I'm really hoping that's with people who have an idea of what active support actually is.
Yep.
And if you are going to the game, and hopefully Pat's got this out prior, if you are going to the game and manage to listen to this, then please, I recommend getting there a little early and finding a spot and standing in a group to give people an idea of it. That's what's to expect. There's posters going up on the big screen every 5 minutes for the last half an hour prior to kickoff, explaining to people exactly what the Fever Zone is going to be. The posters are up and around, people will see them as well, just so they know what to expect while they're there. Because there's almost always has problems. There are places that there are people that have bought in there who aren't happy with what happens. They can go places. There are plenty of other seats around. So hopefully it doesn't become a shit show. It could become a shit show. It's been a shit show in the past. I remember being to a game prior to me shooting. Actually, this was an all-whites game where we end up shifting zone to a completely separate part of QBE.
QBE have a reputation for, unfortunately, not managing these well. Hopefully Eden Park are a little bit better, yep, and hopefully the Knicks have gotten on to this.
Yeah, the Knicks they've had conversations, as far as I know. The security should be pre-briefed about what they need to do. So, yeah, but it's a great sign. It's a great sign. I mean, yay the bandwagon. That's basically what it is.
Oh, totally.
The Phoenix have obviously gone into this game thinking, you know, this is what we've got at QBE for the last few games that we've had up here, and the Auckland head really has not come out to support it. But I think this is a combination not just of the fantastic results we've been having, but Eden Park is a much, much more accessible ground. As in, part of the fact that there's a train station right there, it's half an hour walk from the CBD, from Queen Street, from the waterfront. It's half an hour, if you had to wander out there, which makes it a brilliant proposition for people.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's good to see a stadium that is of a, well, basically a rugby size, that is getting properly filled. Not filled.
It holds 40,000 people, doesn't it? So we're going to look at over half full. So, and if they do the thing that they usually do and they group them all together in the same areas, that's going to look pretty good on TV.
Yep. So hopefully there'll be a fair bit of noise up there too. That will be the my main hope, because it is a bit of a tough game.
Oh, it's a hard game. And, yeah, I think another problem there is that the Fever doesn't have a roof over them, so the noise might not go out, it'll go up. But they will do their absolute damnedest to make it as good as they possibly can.
Yeah, I know of at least a few people that have gone up nice and early, so that it's not like they'll be working. They'll be voices well lubricated.
Yeah, my flight's not till tomorrow afternoon, so it's and I'm going straight to Eden Park from the airport. Not that I'll be lubricated for the game anyway, but, it's certainly going to be a short time in Auckland for me.
Yeah, short and sweet, hopefully. So what do we think of this game? Victory, sounds like no Toivonen.
Toivonen is out.
Yep.
He's not travelled, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, my understanding is still corked leg. Honda presumably will be coming in for their missing Antonis, I believe.
Yes, I think he's suspended.
Yeah, I think he's got his fifth yellow.
Yeah, so though Antonis and Toivonen out is a big, big blow for them.
Definitely.
Toivonen has been very good this season. And
he's been exceptional, and Antonis has been very, very good, especially at the beginning of the year.
He's unlucky he didn't get selected in the Asia Cup team. And there was a lot of chat around that at the time. So, yeah, it's two big blows. But if Honda's fit enough to start, they're not going to miss Antonis.
I'd rather have just Honda rather than Honda and Antonis.
Yes. If he's not fit enough to start, that actually leaves, I think, a big gap for Victory. Victory are a good side, don't get me wrong. They're a very, very good team. They're sitting second for a reason. They're getting a lot of good points, and we have nothing but trouble against Victory. That's why when we beat them, it feels so good, because they are so good, and we're used to being 3-0 at halftime.
We've got two draws against them this season, haven't we?
So we had a 1-1.
1-1 and a 3-3-all.
Yeah. We have Tom Doyle out. I think they reckon it's 3 weeks. I'm not sure what the injury was. I saw that reported today. We've got, as far as I know, everybody else is fit and rearing to go. And Tom has travelled as well, so I think maybe it was a recent knock in training in the last couple of days.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense because I didn't think it was during the game. We have a ready replacement, Nita Kupczynski, who I happen to think is playing better at the moment anyway.
Yep.
So that is good. It's basically first string 11, Kurto back, presumably.
Yep, as far as I know. And Mandy travelled up. So his child ended up being born yesterday, Wednesday.
Daughter.
Yep, and travelled up Wednesday night to join the team and train today. So great that he got to be there. I understand why he didn't travel under Perth. Newcastle's lolly as he get back from Newcastle and as he get back from Perth, so it makes sense. And yes, because they got to be there for the birth of his daughter and
yeah, that's amazing.
And still get up there and play. And you know, I'm sure he'll probably not travel to Sydney straight away after the game. I'd say he'll probably come back for a day or two before heading back over to Sydney for the next game. So
okay, so basically that tidies up the A-League and the Knicks side of things.
What do you reckon the result's going to be?
Oh, this has the makings of a draw for me as well. I think like a 2-2. I think there'll be goals in it, that's for sure.
I went 3-3. My prediction is 3-3.
Yeah. It just feels like everyone's going to get really excited.
Yeah. And the whole thing is exciting, to be honest. Like the fact that we're at Eden Park, I love Eden Park. I think it's a great place to watch sport. The fact that there's so many tickets have been sold and it's looking like it's going to be a 20K plus crowd, which is fantastic. FIBA Zone sold out. That's going to make it incredibly noisy. Yeah, the whole thing is exciting. It really is. Friday night, people get looking up on a Friday night. What are you going to do? Let's go to the football, have a laugh. You can see the cricket, which is on at Eden Park out at Oval Prior, if you really wanted to. Yeah, it's, head to the pub with the Fever Boys. I can't remember what pub they're actually heading to be honest.
The Morningside Tavern.
Yeah, Morningside Tavern. So head down there.
Morningside for life.
Yeah, it broke down. I'm going to the pub. I may be sometime. So yeah, head down to the Morningside Tavern. And have a couple of cold cokes with the Fever lads and ladies and then head off to the ground. It'll be a good time.
Yeah. The only thing I can say on top of that is that, let's face it, the Knicks lads will be excited because a big crowd and playing away up in Auckland as well. And everyone getting excited. And let's face it, victory, they tend to punch out at teams that punch at them. So hopefully it should be an entertaining spectacle.
Agreed.
So let's move on to T-Dubs. They also had two games. First of all, the Well Classico
Before we move off the A-League. This is something I found out today. Newcastle are resting six players for their match against Melbourne City. So it looks like they are prioritising the ACL.
Which, to me, makes sense. I mean, they're going to struggle to catch sixth place.
Mm-hmm.
And they did have a good win. Mr. Redington getting a goal for, who were they playing? Indonesian team.
Yeah, don't remember.
Jakarta, maybe?
Yes, there was a team from Jakarta. So it was just quite interesting that's bad for us. He's resting six players because they're playing against City, who are fighting with us for those playoff spots right at this point in time. So that's not so good for us. And kind of very early, eight games to go, throwing in the towel.
I think it's more the scheduling because they're now going to have to go away, next year. So that's going to be a tough job. So I totally agree. I think that's the way to handle it. I certainly would be thinking that way as well.
My bad.
Okay, so T-Dubs also played two games. The Well Classico, that was the Wednesday game.
That was the Wednesday game, yes.
I knew I'd seen a Wednesday game somewhere. I actually went to that one.
I don't see you down at David Farrington too often, but if you go to one,
it is a long, long way.
Yeah.
And that ended a fairly creditable and not much of a struggle 3-0 to.
Pretty comfortable.
Yeah. I thought that the Knicks Rezzies weren't bad. They certainly gave their all. They just seemed to lack a little bit of that class right across the park. I think it almost looked like experience. I mean, I was very surprised that they were physically able to match T-Dubs.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of big boys in there for, 17-year-olds.
Well, it shows what proper nutrition and professional training and development can do for
them. Yeah, I mean, when you compare how big even Libby was, who's not a small unit now, when he was playing for them, he looked, half the size some of these guys did. In fact, I would say that some of them looked bigger than the T-Dubs boys. Which is saying something, but they just didn't seem to have that cutting edge at all.
For me, they lacked in transition, they lacked composure, mainly on the ball. Nothing wrong with passing and recycling possession through their defensive line, but apart from, I think it was Ben Wayne up top,
yeah.
they seemed to, there wasn't anything else there. And the few times he got the ball and tried to do something, he came off a couple of times, mainly he didn't.
He winged himself a lot.
Yeah, he really did.
And the one time that he probably should have gone himself, he didn't. He got right into the box and then tried to finicky little pass.
I thought that did the woodwork though.
Yes, actually smashed it.
Yeah, so it was. I think Marcel and Golf T-Dubs got fingertips the ball onto the crossbar,
certainly made a great pen save.
It was a very, very good pen save. So it's not like they didn't have their chances. The chances were there, but again, lack of composure, lack of experience, whatever. Not so much on the penalties as it is what it is.
I thought it was a great pen.
Yeah.
Marcel looked like he told him where to put it.
Yeah. Marcel has trained with the Phoenix Academy. It's possible that he's trained with these guys. He's a little bit older, but yeah, I don't remember the age group that he was there. So, yeah, so there's a lot going on there. It's still a comfortable win, and I don't think it was ever in doubt for Team Wellington, to be honest, and felt like it could win a few more. He wouldn't have begrudged the Phoenix a goal, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I thought the only other outstanding player that kind of stood up a little bit was the guy playing at right back, Callan
Elliott.
Yes, thank you. I don't think he plays there normally. Looked like he just was filling in at the time, but I thought he did a bang up job.
Yep.
Certainly shored up that defense quite nicely. T-Dubs were just T-Dubs, though, weren't they? They looked like they were kind of back to where they.
What I actually think, because for the previous games, they hadn't played well since they'd gotten back from the club off. They had a win, two draws, and a loss.
Totally agree. They looked
poor. What this did was, I think it just gave them a hit out where they got some goals, they got up, they got to work out the bugs and the rubbish, and it actually started to plot together. And it wasn't this game to me that made them look like they were back to themselves. It was the next one. So before we move on, this game was the last game for Hamish Watson, who's moved over to play in the VPL. Scott Hillier was the next.
Okay.
Next week. So, but he almost signed off the goal. Managed to hit the post quite late after coming on for Watto. So it was would have been nice to see him go off. But what this basically shows, and I'll include Scott Hillier in this now. They've managed to lose Mario Barcia, who's gone to Semen Padang in Indonesia.
Yeah,
they've lost. They've lost Gulls, who's gone to the Knicks. And they've lost Hillier and Watto, who have gone to play in the VPL. So they've lost, they're playing a back three, and they've lost two of those to outside. They've lost their starting defensive midfielder and their leading goal scorer all in the last month, which is a massive blow. He was leading goal scorer for T-Dubs this season. He was on eight, I think. He had eight off nine games or something at one point. So.
Yeah, but I mean, to me, Watto's less of a loss than the other guys. I mean, he wasn't getting more than like 10 minutes a game.
But he was scoring goals. And that makes us in. They've come back off the Club World Cup. They're playing poorly. These guys have got picked up to move on. And it looks to me like they were just, I don't know, they're lacking the belief. They're lacking the cohesion that they had previously.
They're not up for it as much. Come down off Everest and go climb Mount Vic.
Totally agree. But this hit out against Phoenix seems to have gone, you know what, we can win games. And when we move on to the next game against Eastern Suburbs, that's where it proves to be.
Well, let's move on to that. I didn't see this game, but certainly Easts have been flying high all season and brought them down with a bit of a thump.
Yeah, so we call this World Classico B, obviously, because there's so many Wellington player-based players playing for Eastern Suburbs.
Western.
There was nine.
Eastern, Western Suburbs.
Yeah, Wests. There was nine, I think, starting for Eastern Suburbs this time around. The two that weren't, that I recall, were De Jong and Payne. So
who aren't bad players.
Very, very good players. Eastern Suburbs team is brilliant. They are a fantastic unit of footballers. I rate Callum McCowart, Owen Parker-Price, and Eli Just very, very highly. I think those three guys.
Justin
McCart, all three of them for me could be playing at a higher level than they currently are. They are very, very good, and I hope for their career's sake they get picked up and by teams in Europe, because they deserve that opportunity. They are great footballers.
I think that they need pro contracts. What I've seen of Just and McCowart, especially McCowart,
yeah.
But obviously we know that there's a little bit of a rift between Wests and the Knicks. So it's unlikely that they'll kind of go there, which is a shame because I'd love to see some more really talented Kiwis. And I we'll get to this in a second, playing for the Knicks. Yeah. Nice little segue, actually. Well done, mate.
Well, we're not going to talk about that at this point. We're just going to go with Mikal scored the goal for Easts.
Yes, he
was excellent early on, actually. The first 20 minutes, they hit the post from a shot from Mikal again, I think it was. He scored from range. He took a shot from range, but took a deflection off Taylor Schreiber's in defence and went in past Scott. To be fair, Scott didn't have a chance. It was a really nice finish. And I actually thought Easts were good for the goal. Once they scored that goal, however, it all became T-Dubs. T-Dubs really started to dominate possession. They started to dominate territory. They certainly dominated opportunities. Not to say East didn't have more, they did, but T-Dubs really started to come back into that game. And they scored, I can't remember the goal. Who scored the first one? Frosty, look it up on your on your app. So the first goal, McCall scored in the 27th minute. See, first goal was scored by Ross Allen. And again, I remember him celebrating it, but I don't actually remember how he scored the goal. So it doesn't stick in the brain. But the 38th minute, Aaron Clapham manages to round the keeper and put T-Dubs ahead 2-1. And then penalty late in the first half, 45th minute, and Ross Allen slots that home to make it 3-1. And when it was 1-1, I was saying to one of the other photogs who was standing beside me that it was it legit felt like that was a fair scoreline. Like they both had some decent amounts of possession, some good opportunities. East's opportunities were better. T-Dubs probably had more. But as soon as that second goal went in, East seemed to lose their heads a bit. They're not a team, they haven't conceded very many goals this season, and they've scored a lot. They're not a team that's used to being behind at all. And obviously there was a bit to prove against Team Wellington, considering the connections that the Eastern Suburbs teams had with Wellington. So going in 3-1 at half-time, I actually think they're probably flattered Team Wellington, but can be put down, I think, a decent portion of that to Easts not having the composure I really expected from them to have. Start of second half.
Yeah, it felt to me when I was hearing about it was that there was a massive crowd for Easts, which they probably don't get as much back home, certainly not as partisan for the players individually, a lot of Wests and Ole guys going along to that.
Yeah, a lot of kids out there from Ole as well. And do you know what? That's great to see.
Totally.
Whilst obviously I'm a T-Dubs fan, what I do like to see is these guys getting in behind their team and being vocal, vociferous with their support for the team. And good on them, you know. Start of the second half, the game really turned on the red card to Tim Payne. So it's a through ball over the top, which Andy Bevan has managed to get to ahead of Tim Payne. Tim's gone for the ball outside the box, but he has collected the player. Bevan has stumbled and then fallen, let's say, but there was 100% definitely contact between Tim Payne and Andy Bevan. Because it was outside the box, there's no longevity, and it was a dog so. Because he was through on goal and he was the last man.
Yeah.
So for me, it was a fair red card, but it did. I can't blame the ref for giving it. 100% he should have given it. It was the right call, but it did change the game markedly. And from that point forward, whilst Easts did create some opportunities, there weren't any really good ones. There was a lot of shots wide and over, but T-Dubs just held ball, recycled possession, and did what they needed to do against 10 men.
The Jose way.
Yeah, the Jose way. It was really, really well done. So fair result, I think, over the course of the 90 minutes. Easts probably have some thinking to do moving into the semi-finals, where I think it's likely T-Dubs will probably finish third now, I would say, and Easts will probably finish second, just looking at who they've both got left to play, mainly because T-Dubs have got Auckland to play and they've also got their trip to the islands. So I think the likelihood is they'll end up finishing in third position, so they'll play each other in the semis.
Yeah.
That's a big, big, big second place gets the second spot in the Champions League if first place wins the grand final.
Yeah,
Auckland's got first place already guaranteed after their 2-1 win against the Knicks in the same weekend. So they will probably make the grand final. And unless if East finish second, T-Dubs have to win the grand final to make it through to the Champions League again. So, yeah, it's going to be quite a big one. So
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously the T-Dubs really want to get that second place, but it's going to be tough going because they're up against Bar, who aren't exactly slouches, especially not in the islands.
No. The other issue with the table is the goal difference for East is
phenomenal. It's massive. Yeah. It's nearly 30 goals. Yeah. It's huge. T-Dubs,
they're dropping points against Southern and dropping points against Tasman was the big issue for them, those two draws.
Canterbury as well, wasn't there?
Not so much because Canterbury are sitting in fourth. That was here, and they're sitting in fourth, and they've been very good this season. The loss to Waitak, I think, was the biggest issue.
Oh, yeah, that was the killer.
Yeah, so those three games in a row where they got 2 points and they really should have been looking at seven, then that's going to cost them second place this season.
Yeah. I guess it kind of wraps up the handy prem.
Yep.
Although it should be noted that Southern played Auckland City, mm-hmm. Was it last night?
Last night, yep.
Yep. And nicked a nice little point off them.
So Auckland, because it was a midweek makeup game from the one they had to postpone due to weather, it was...
Flooding.
Yeah, that's fair. They had to make a midweek game, and Auckland rested a lot of players. They did. The team they sent down should still have been capable of winning. But credit to Southern, they played some good football and they got a really creditable point out of that. And it's fair too.
Any point you get against Auckland City, I don't care if it's 3 seconds. Yeah.
The creditable part of this is that, and the good part of this is that Southern were leading 1-0 against Auckland when they had to abandon that game. So the fact that they didn't, I mean, they didn't give it a goal, they took the lead early. The fact that they managed to get a point out of this is, I feel, a little justified compared to where they're at. In the previous attempt at playing this game.
Yeah. I guess that's mostly of our regular business. There was, just because there's only two of us and we can kind of do what we want, to be quite honest, what I thought we might want to do is talk about something I noticed is quite interesting, an article talking about the number of minutes for teenagers in the A-League. You read that article too, Ken?
I did have a read of that article. I find it quite interesting that Western Sydney, who are sitting second on this now that their things have gone to hell for them, have really started to bring in through the teenagers and the young guys, and they've played a lot more of the young players than we have. But we've been very reliant on the two main teams, the two teenagers that have turned out for us. They've played a lot of minutes in Singh and Kikache.
They're starting. That's, and they have started basically all but one game, I think.
Yeah, they have. But there has been a lot of talk about this, and I think it's also combined with the Knicks moving into the winter season with a partnership with Lower Hutt City. So Lower Hutt City have a team in the Central League. They've got a team in Capital One, Capital M3. Three, and so on down the divisions. And by the looks of things, the Phoenix are going to be taking over a lot of the club. They're going to be playing their under-20s team, which is effectively their hand of premiership team in the Central League.
Yep.
They're going to be playing an under-17s team in the Capital One and the 16 team in Capital Three. So those are very competitive divisions, and they're playing a lot of guys who have been playing for a long time. They're men. They're good enough to play competitive football. They'll be quite a brutal introduction, I think, to football for those kids playing in those divisions.
Yeah, I think that certainly there's going to be a lot of guys out there that are trying to impose physicality on them.
Mm-hmm.
Coming back to the article a little bit, we kind of look at Singh and Kikache. Kikache certainly moved into the first team fairly rapidly in the end, got given a chance courtesy of injuries and all whites duty and everything, and seemed to take it with both hands, whereas Singh, not being as physically strong, took a little while longer. He was in the squad for quite a while and was obviously exceptionally talented, but did take a little while to progress. But now I think that we're talking about both of them having racked up nearly 2,800 minutes in total for the season between the two of them, which the stat that got me was that is more than the combined other eight teams outside the Wanderers combined.
Well, up until the Wanderers, things started to fall apart for them this season, you could have chucked them in there as well.
Yeah.
It's only very recently that they started playing their young guys and who have started to get minutes to take them out of that equation.
I was chatting to a workmate who's a former pro in Russia, Ukraine, and Finland, and he was kind of asking about the academy, I think mainly because his kids are starting to grow up a bit. And I was saying that Singh and Kikache are basically the first tier of guys that have been all the way through the academy, as opposed to, say, Roof and Redenton that just caught the couple of years before they kind of rolled out.
Well, Rufa never went through the academy. He was signed straight out of school.
True.
Dinton was assigned at the same time. He never went through either.
But they did play for the they played for the Rizzies for quite a while.
Yes, they did. You can look at the NBC guys. So, yeah, Watto and Tom Doyle, Scott Basselet, Fenton, Tyler Boyd, those guys who were in the first edition of the Football School of Excellence. That was kind of the precursor to the academy.
Yeah, it's basically getting that. I mean, for me, that structure kind of started when we first got a WeNix team, and then it was kind of like, so that's your 20, you know, your, what is it, 18s to 21s sort of thing. And then we didn't have anything below that, and then the academy kind of came in, and that's, you know, got them, I think it was like 2 or 3 years originally. And now, obviously, with the partnership with Scots College, it's basically going for 5 years for that secondary school period. It's kind of interesting that we're now getting to the stage where we're seeing, you know, guys coming through with a full 5 years of junior training in an environment, and we're starting to see guys that are able to step up, Singh and Libby. This could be a bit of an aberration, but judging by the way the WeNix guys are looking, you know, they look. I mean, I think probably because of the Handy Prem as well. Is that, you know, they look like they're able to step up more physically, which I look back maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and you saw, you know, different guys that were markedly different sizes to the players that they were playing against and weren't able to physically compete. And so, you know, they might have had the skills, but learning that mentality and that competitiveness just wasn't something that they were able to do until they're able to physically compete. I think that the WeNix guys now look a different kettle of fish. I look at them now, and it's now a question of whether they're skilled enough to make the step up. And, I mean, let's face it, that gap between age group level and up to seniors is a massive step. I mean, you no longer have to be the best in your age group and, say, one or two on either side. You now have to be the best in your position. And that's saying something. But the fact that we're seeing two guys come through and basically record starting spots for an entire season is massive.
It's a great showing for the other 70 kids that are in that academy to show them that there is a pathway there. The other pathway, obviously, is for people like Willem Ebbage and Calvin Harris going across to colleges in the US. So it's not necessarily that you pick up a pro contract straight out of there, but, you know, if that isn't the path that's suited for you and you haven't quite reached that or attained that level, college with the possibility of training in effectively a professional environment for another 3 years is also a great step.
Yeah, as well as obviously in education. I think we had something like 4 players come out of the WeNix who have gone off to or have college scholarships.
Recently. There's been a lot more.
This mid-season, there was about 4 of them, I think, including one that went off to Harvard, which isn't a bad wee gig.
It's pretty smart to get into there, so that's quite a good effort.
Yeah, it is. And then obviously we've got Justin Gully, who was originally with WeNix in T-Dubs when he didn't quite make the cut for the...
He was with T-Dubs, then with the Knicks, playing a lot for the WeNix, and then gone back to T-Dubs. Now he's gone back to the Knicks again. So,
yeah. But, I mean, I really, like I say, there's a big step up between those junior squads and going to seniors, and you know, there's a potential that it may take slightly longer to get on that professional roller coaster. And for Gully, it has. He's back in the environment now, has a professional contract, and I hope that the guys going off to play college football, this kind of stands them in good stead, not just as an education and a life experience perspective, but also US colleges are basically professional setups in all but paying the players. So I hope that kind of lifts their game as well. So, I mean, I think that, you know, potentially we could see those sorts of guys either coming back or making the USL, US Soccer League. And then hopefully, you know, even going up to MLS or coming back or Europe. And it's something that... It kind of bugs me that as a salary cap league, we're not seeing much at all. The Wanderers are basically doing it only because Babel doesn't trust his own players and he doesn't think he's getting results and he's just hoping for something out of the ordinary. Brisbane, it looks, I mean, they had a 16-year-old playing for them who, you know, by all accounts is an exceptionally talented player. But it does feel like the cupboard's very bare for them. and it doesn't seem like it's the go-to, like that they believe in their academy players, like they're grooming them. It just seems to be a throw of the dice at the moment, and that's worrying. I like the way the Knicks are doing it. You know, these guys are being given opportunities, but it's not just a roll of the dice. It's they've been groomed for this, and then they're kind of coming through.
Yeah, I think, to be fair, we need to give a shout to Olay for the similar sort of things that they're doing as well. Now, I was off the rumour mill. I'm not sure how accurate this is, but it says they've invested in a team in a lower tier in Sweden. So that's giving, you know, guys that attain a level that they can't move on from in New Zealand another outlet where they can go to. So there's more than one pathway, and there are lots of teams that are doing it differently. I like the way the Knicks are doing it. I totally agree with you. Ole produce good footballers. There is no argument there.
Declan's a lunatic, but he is. He's an interesting character, but he certainly knows how to coach players.
Sure, and when you look at someone like Ben Sapolo, he's absolutely brilliant with the kids. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's a good coach. So there's a lot of good stuff coming out of there with different pathways. And it's great to see. It's great for the football, for the country moving forward. This is the conversation we can now have. When they've got the under 20 squad up in Auckland currently with working with Dez, and I think there's like 50 or 60 guys. 70 guys who have, in that age group, who have been deemed to have enough about them to be taken a look at by the
national. There was 20 that were originally in the under 20 tournament. It was under 19, rather. Under 19s, under 20s,
yeah.
In the islands. Mm-hmm. And then there's none of those players have basically been picked for this trial squad, and there's something like 50 players in there. But I think that may include some guys who are actually overseas and not able to make it back.
Yeah,
but we're talking 70 players who are there or thereabouts. There's a couple of Australian raised players who are with the Knicks, Tumsus and Stensness.
I'm not going to try and pronounce those names.
But Stensness, I'm pretty sure I've got that one.
So the good thing about this is that the Knicks have actually dragged those five guys into their own training camp while they've been up in Auckland.
Yeah, I thought that was amazing.
That shows a lot of trust from Rudan and the squad that he's got, especially in those young guys, to bring them in and to have them training with the first team squad. It shows, obviously, he's got a belief in their ability, and I've seen some of the kids play, obviously, and some of them, like those. The guy wasn't say so. I think he's quite a talented footballer. He needs to pass a bit more. He could turn into quite.
Yeah, he was the one that almost pulled that spin move in the box. Yeah.
Number eight for Wenix. He's a good player.
Yeah, he's got some showboating skills. That one. Yeah. If he can learn to play with another 10 players, he could be outstanding.
There is one other thing we should be talking about tonight before we go, though, and that's the rumours of that have been coming up around Mark Rudan's contract moving into next season. There's always been some fairly negative articles in the internets in the last 24 hours or so. My take on this is, and I've put this out there in the social media world as well, that he's just not negotiating contracts in public. It's obvious that there is interest from another group. I don't think the rumours and stuff would be out there if there wasn't interest from another area.
Let's be honest, you have a look at more than half of the clubs in the A-League, their coaches are not performing. Why would there not be interest?
Yeah, it kind of makes sense with what he's managed to achieve. He has a contract for next season, so ostensibly right now he's here next season. If that was to change, first off, I don't want him to leave. I think he's doing amazing things with our team. I want him to continue. If he was to leave, there would have to be a massive change, especially as he's already under contract, for this to go through.
And we've kind of glossed over the fact that his family is still over in Sydney. That is, he's born and raised in Sydney, and his family, including his kids, are in Sydney. So obviously there's a big draw for him to get back over there, closer to his family. I know that Rob Morrison was hoping to get the family moved over here, but that's obviously quite a big step. I mean, that'd be moving away from family and support.
Yeah, and kids are still in school. All of those things.
They're quite young, aren't they? They're
teenagers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not late teens, early teens, but teenagers nonetheless.
Yeah, that's a big adjustment, especially for the sake of 1 year left on a contract.
Mm-hmm.
Because you think it's basically, it'll take you 3 to 6 months to get settled, and then have the idea of you having to turn around in a year's time and go back again, that would be painful. And if anyone who's ever tried buying a house of late has, you know, is how long that can take at times. So you can imagine you're staying in rented accommodation or all from a pragmatic point of view, that would be a hell of a struggle to kind of work through.
Yep.
From my perspective, I kind of look at it and go, well, he's basically at a club where there is not any long-term future unless we get the new license. And at the moment, that's not in concrete. And I think he's a fairly pragmatic man, and I would basically say, until I see that there is a license, I'm banking on there being more than one more year here. I don't know. Melbourne, they might turn around and go, we'll give you a four-year contract or something like that. So, I mean, he's got to weigh these things up. And at the moment, as you say, he's not negotiating in public, which, you know, he seems like a quite pro.
A professional way of doing things. Good on him.
And I think that there's every incentive for him right now basically to back himself and go, I'm just coaching the team and I'm doing a good job at the moment and I will continue to do a good job. And if anything, that will raise my worth going forward. And basically, he has a one year left on the contract anyway. But if another, you know, if anyone else is showing interest, that's fine. That's not on my agenda. And who knows? It may be that that with only 1 year left on the contract, something else, you know, 1 year left on the license, and nothing comes up, that he, you know, he needs another gig long term. Because let's face it, that, you know, being a coach who's only coached for a year, even though he's been successful, it's not a big CV to try and ship overseas, and certainly he wouldn't want to try if Wellington's too far away. You know, going to Korea or Indonesia or wherever, it's going to be way too far. So, you know, he's got to be able to talk himself into a job going forward. So, yeah, I mean, as you say, he's done an amazing job here.
Yep.
To turn around that quickly,
yep.
That shit show that was last year, my God, that's a good effort.
And I say, I want him to stay long term. I'd love him to get a 5 year contract and let's take the Max on to the next level. He certainly started the job that way. But if he didn't have to go, I'd wish him all the best because he's done everything right by the club and he's not airing things out when he shouldn't be airing things out. He's doing exactly what he should. So, you know, yeah, I think this is something that we should just put to bed right now and let it play out and not speculate on it and see what happens and take it out of the media and just let's focus on the actual good parts of the football.
Yeah, I totally agree. The weird thing is because it's in the public forum, the football team is that it's gone speculation on contracts as well. And it's taken as a given that, you know, we can indulge in this, but it's kind of like, I know how I'd feel if someone started speculating whether I've got a job in a year's time, you know, I've got a contract, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, well, I guess I'm like, well, no, none of your bloody business, pal. So I think he's handling it well enough. Whatever his intent is, he has at least a year's contract, and the only way that that's going to go away is if something else happens. So, yeah, it's a very meh note to end on, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Let's just get excited about tomorrow night.
Yeah.
It's a pity you're not going, man. You'd have a great time.
Yeah, I can't really justify it at the moment, unfortunately.
Let's start putting that cash aside so we can go to the playoff and if we have an away playoff, which we will have an away playoff, let's be honest.
Yeah, I'm still well in debt. My brownie points for the bike, so. And that was a year ago.
I'm not going to try and talk you into it. Sorry, mate, you're on your own and stuff.
No, I think I'll try and save them in case we get that playoff in Sydney or something.
Yeah, that's wrong.
I'm sure I can do it.
Yeah.
You don't think that at all, do you?
I'm pretty sure I'm going by myself.
Yeah. Okay, how about we wrap it up there?
Yep, cool.
Thanks. Thanks for listening. Go the Knicks.
Just the two of us brings you. Parties in the 09 bring you.
Parties in my basement bring you.
Not watching football brings you. Semen Padang brings you.
Party under the Mrs. Nose brings you. She's literally there.
Yeah.
I can read, I can play you the teaser trailer for Frozen 2, if you like.
Is it Frozen 2?
Yeah, they're making it.
Dear God, no. Dear God, no.